Welcome back, guys. And today we're going to be talking about the United States men's national team and what's happened to them. And if you don't know us personally, we're all roughly around the same age. And for me growing up, you know, I'm that guy that doesn't really watch soccer that much. I follow the team every 4 years for the World Cup, or if they're playing a big match, maybe against Mexico, I'll watch. But am I wrong in saying that from the early 2000s till about 2014, they had kind of a golden era? Whether it was Clint Dempsey, Landon Donovan, Jozy Altidore, they were never going to win a World Cup, but they had enough talent on the roster and they played hard enough to where they weren't an easy win for some of the top teams. And they played with a lot of pride. And I think that's kind of missing from the team. Would you say that time period was their golden era? And why would that be the case, if so?
I 100% agree when it comes to the last generation. You could even put it back to the 94 World Cup team, where truly where Alexis Lalas and the team of that caliber really started the whole golden generation of the U.S. national team. And I feel like the whole Jurgen Klinsmann era, you could even say the Bradley era, these teams had at least consistent core. You know, you could say they switched out a couple players, but there was always a consistent core. And I feel like that's the one thing that the U.S. national team is missing nowadays, is that consistent core. What it was for the U.S. team during that era, they always had a top keeper, like Tim Howard. They always had a top defender, if not a top defender, a serviceable defender. And a lot of times, you could say it was DeAndre Yedlin. You could say it was players of that caliber where they were always consistently there doing what they needed to do. And in the midfield, you needed that maestro, that sort of general, the captain, like a Bradley. You could even say, like when Dempsey was playing further back, somebody like that who could literally be consistent and make sure the players who are not playing or who are playing, but they're not pulling their weight, he's the one that will actually command there. And of course, up front, you need that striker. You need that offensive weapon that is also consistent and gives passion and is willing to play 100% of the times. You have no idea how many times I have seen a report that Pulisic or that Tillman or it's some other big player the U.S. national team has is not playing because they don't want to play. They're too tired. Like, they don't want to be taken away from club football. No, you are playing for the U.S. national team, especially Christian Pulisic. You're supposed to be Captain America. You're supposed to be the man that's supposed to be the one taking the team forward. If you are not playing and if you're not setting that standard, when the national team calls me, I am there 100% of the time. Other players are going to be like, you know what? It's a friendly match. I don't need that. I'm going to take a step back. No, that is not the way that the U.S. national team should work. And it wasn't like that. But when you get called up, it was an honor. It was a badge on you could take on and show that I am the best. I am representing my country. And that's the one thing I did not see. And especially if you could talk about, you know, what's been going on recently with a lot of these players. They're not taking the national team as a sort of privilege, to taking as like, oh, I deserve it. You don't deserve it. You don't deserve anything. You clearly don't, because if you're not putting that sort of emotion and that effort when you do put on the stars and stripes, then you don't deserve to be called up. For me, that is what is lacking when it comes to U.S. national team compared to the national team before, where they actually had all of the things that they needed. They needed that core, and they don't have the people that actually put on the pressure in order to fully maximize this team. Because honestly, these players are probably better when it comes to conditioning and training, but they don't got that passion, don't got that heart, they don't have the consistency.
No, the problem is that the coach, he's the head coach, and he has to talk with those players and say, if you don't come to the U.S. team, sorry, but there's other players, you're going to get kicked off of the team. That's the problem of the coaches. That what Mexico's coach is doing is that if you don't want to join the national team, that means you don't have no pride. Sorry, I'm not going to call you anymore. That's what the U.S. need to do.
Juan, would you agree that that previous generation was the golden one?
Yes. In 2002, they defeated Mexico, and I feel like they went to quarterfinal, and for me, they would have made it to the semifinal in 2002.
That was South Korea, wasn't it?
Yeah. And there's I know 2006 was a fumble, like they didn't compete that well. But in 2010 and 14, one goal that they needed, they lost the game and they got kicked out. But still, this is that generation team was one of the best.
Okay, so we're all on the same page, because when I was doing my research for this podcast on the USMNT Reddit, they were saying the current one, the golden era. And I always assumed everyone thought that the previous one was the golden generation.
You know, when it comes to that, the whole idea of this is being the current, the golden generation, they put it more towards the talent that's in play. You know, you could say that during the whole 2014, you know, back, like I say, to 94, even 2002, for that World Cup, a lot of the players weren't like European quality players that weren't playing for the top teams. And you could say now that at least the headline players are playing for their top teams, like Christian Pulisic with AC Milan, Tillman, he's right now playing for PSV, you know, formerly for Bayern. You could say like Weah currently playing for Marseille when it comes to Champions League football. You know, a lot of these players are now playing with these top clubs. You know, McKennie, he's now playing for Juventus. Tyler Adams is still with Bournemouth. But the players back then, even though they weren't playing at the top end, the top teams, I bet you if you put them a 1v1, they're going, both teams are playing against each other. I can guarantee you 9 times out of 10, the back then generation, the golden era we're talking about before 2014, those players would show more passion, more heart, and they would actually win compared to these teams. And now I could go player by player to show you that, but I feel like it'd be too much and we can carry on.
Yeah, and then so the last question I had for you guys about the previous generation before we get to what's wrong with the current one is, so it did seem like, I don't know the exact time period, but okay, let's just say 2002 up until fairly recently, like they were pretty competitive with Mexico, their main rival. And I think they even had more wins against Mexico than not over a certain period. I forget what it is. And I think that was because the players viewed it as a rivalry. And now when I'm watching them play Mexico over the last couple times, it seems like the players do not care about it anymore. Am I wrong in saying that? Because they've gotten, Mexico's kind of taken back control of the rivalry. Would you say that's a fair statement?
It's a yes and no, and it's really just depends on who's playing. There is a lot of, you could say, consistency when it comes to the rivalry aspect. A lot of people, you know, and this is one thing that's really an issue, and it's been an issue for years when it comes to the U.S. national team. When they're playing Mexico in the U.S., there is a guaranteed 60-40 at minimum Mexico fans compared to U.S. fans. And I feel like that's a huge thing. And it's a huge disadvantage. And I could give you an example currently. I went to the Levi Stadium game, San Jose versus LAFC. There was a majority Korean fan base for one player, Heung-Min Son. And they showed it at the game. Every time the LAFC got the ball, every time Heung-Min Son got the ball, there was a clear, loud difference. The levels were different. The way they celebrated, and I feel like that's a big thing. When the U.S. national team are playing home games and they're being outshone by the away teams when it comes to fan base, atmosphere, and pressure, I feel like it's a big thing. And that's the one thing that sometimes it doesn't really feel like a rivalry because you're at home and you still feel like you're in some away game. And some players, they shut down from that. They don't take it as a sort of badge of honor that you're basically going to the gates of hell to play this game. They'll take it as of, oh, what's the point? You know, every time I get the ball, and if I do mess up, I'm going to lose either way. So, and in a way, it's a yes and no. Some players don't take it. Some players do, but the majority of it, they don't take it that way. So instead of the game feeling special, a lot of the times the game feels stale. And that's the one thing that the U.S. national team needs to do. Not make games stale.
And here's another thing. When they stopped playing in Columbus, because the main reason why U.S. and Mexico, they always play in Columbus is just because, number one, the American fan base, they know that this is the place that Mexico always feared. The U.S. I feel like the U.S. needs to stay in one certain spot.
If you think about it, I mean, we all played sports. If you're playing in an atmosphere on the road and the fans are jacked up, like, wouldn't that make you want to play harder? But apparently not for some of these current players, right?
No, yeah, 100%. And again, I've seen it where in a way of what Juan was talking about with the whole idea of Columbus, that is the one thing that the U.S. national team prided on. Every time we played on Columbus, we played in that stadium, the Mexico team would actually feel the pressure of the fans, would actually feel the atmosphere. And that's the one thing. I can give you another example. Bolivia, you know, places like Bolivia, Ecuador, Peru, the players were high elevation. They would purposely play in a stadium with the highest elevation possible for the opposing team to then actually feel bad. They would need oxygen every time they hit the bench, because that's how severe, that's how much of an advantage it is. That's the one thing the U.S. national team is now taking away from the sort of success they're going to have, is that they've now swayed away, they've now gone away from this sort of traditional hallowed ground, and now they're playing in other stadiums where they don't have that advantage, and other national teams have taken advantage of that. I'll give you another example. USA versus Korea. It was 70% Korean fans, and the U.S. lost that game. And it showed. Like, you walk out, and you're like, I'm at home, I'm in the U.S., and you walk out, and you just see a bunch of opposing fans. That will already hit you. Like, that will already give you your confidence low. And a lot of these players, they don't have the experience because they don't want to play these games. So when they go into a hostile environment, they're going to be flustered and not going to know what to do. And guess what? The U.S. national team is going to suffer because of it.
And then talking about the current players, when I was doing my research this morning, one thing that kind of struck me, and it's been in the headlines recently, like, you don't have to do too much research to figure this out, was it seems like the current players are pretty coddled in, you know, what games they pick and choose to play in. But also we have situations where players' parents are getting involved with them. They're chirping at the coach. And I saw in an interview, Alexi Lalas was talking about how, yes, U.S. soccer, it is a meritocracy, but it's also not. There's a lot of politics that go into it. Would you say that the coddling is an issue with the current players, and that are they also lacking a coach to rein the players in?
100%. And this is the one thing, and I'll tell you this from my experience. You know, I am somebody who went through the system, played high school, sort of got scouted in high school in order to play sort of club football somewhere else. I'll tell you this right now. The one thing that's a big issue, and from the start, soccer in the U.S. is an expensive business. If you do not have the capital, you have the hardest chance to actually make it in the U.S. And I feel like that's a big issue. A lot of these players who are making it into these leagues, especially the ones who are actually having the performances, anything to do, all their stuff that's actually built in the U.S., they put much more money to actually get those services than other sports. And that's the reason, that's a big issue when it comes to modern day U.S. soccer. The prime athletes that these should be targeting in order to become some of the best teams in the world, they're being poached by other sports that are cheaper, that have a richer history, and are actually effective to the traits that these people have. Now, I'll give you an example. Imagine the way that LeBron James is built. Imagine that at a soccer field. Imagine he was bred, created, and actually trained to be a soccer player. That'd be a huge ace in the U.S. national team. You talk about, you even say, like, Tyreek Hill for football. His speed, his, the way that he's built. There's another player built almost exactly like him. His name is Adama Traore. He is fast. He is strong. The one thing that he can't do, he can't really score. But imagine if Tyreek Hill was molded to be a top winger who could score. Another big thing, and I feel like that's an issue when it comes to U.S. soccer, that if you build a sort of pampered lifestyle and the idea that a parent is willing to pay thousands for a possible career, imagine when they make it to the big leagues, those parents will actually feel empowered to think, hey, I still got the power. I still have the money. You know, here, let me do this. Let me do that. Now, I feel like that's a big issue, that you have this sort of system that will give better advantages to a richer family, a richer person, rather than a person who can't afford it. And I'll tell you this from my personal experience. I can only go so far when it comes to the system in soccer because my family couldn't afford it. And that's the one thing that sadly, once I got scouted throughout high school, there's a rule that once you play academy football, and this is when I was playing in high school, once you play academy, you cannot play high school. So if I wanted to take the next leap, I would sacrifice a free spot that I could fight for in high school soccer to try to go academy. But the prices were way higher than you'd expect. For a season during that time, one of the academies was charging my family nearly $1,000. And I feel like that's outrageous for a possibility. And that's only for one season. A lot of these academies, they play at least 2 to 3 seasons, at least a season per, you could say a season for fall, season of summer, season of spring. So you can only imagine how much money these families are trying to put into their to the system. And you could say it's a bigger issue, and I feel like it's another issue we could talk about in the future. But I just want to say that for me, that is one of the huge issues that the U.S. soccer system has. And sadly, it's the reason why a lot of players who play for the U.S. national team that don't go through the U.S. system prosper more in the future because they're willing to take a better option rather than being here in the U.S.
There's some players that they actually did older soccer career outside of the U.S. because some of them they couldn't afford. They left the U.S. to go to Europe or to Mexico. And in these places, they don't charge you. It's free. And that's why I forgot when Zlatan made this statement. He was like, I don't know why the U.S. They allow parents to pay for their children to play soccer while in Europe is free.
And I feel like it's also a thing where we talk about that these parents then feel entitled at the next level, at the professional level. And sadly, the U.S. national team is a prime target. And what I mean by that is that they've been sort of in the limelight when it comes to parents, especially parents of former national team players who are former professionals who want to impose their own children into the system. And I feel like that's a bad thing. That's the one thing that the U.S. national team is sadly a victim, but I want to say a victim of their own incompetence. And there is a big sort of, you could say, issue that was brought up during the I believe it was a 2018 or 2022 World Cup. I forget which one it was. The Gio Reyna situation.
2022.
The 2022 World Cup. And there is no... And I'm saying this for all sports, not just soccer. There is no way a parent... Doesn't matter if it's a former player. There should be no right that a parent can impose a team, especially the national team, to force their son, daughter, whatever, to play a game, especially if they're not up to it, if they're not physically capable, and if it's a detriment to the team. And there are possible possibilities in other sports, but when it comes to the U.S. soccer, that one was a huge issue because of the things that allegedly happened afterwards. But for me, I feel like that's the one thing that should never happen. Doesn't matter if it's a U.S. sport, doesn't matter if it's U.S. soccer. Parents, especially former professionals, should know what to do and what not to do. You are no longer playing. You should be nowhere near the club unless you are hired to do so. And I feel like that's a big thing and something that sadly, it may happen in the future still.
Yeah, I could not believe that Pulisic's parents were going after the coach and not, you know, everyone has beef, but they were specifically talking about his playing time publicly. I cannot believe that. That should be a conversation between the player and the coach. Like, are they lacking a manager or is it a bigger issue, like as far as reining the players in and the parents? Because you could get a guy that's like, I don't care what the parents are saying. Or would that not solve the problem in your opinion?
For me, you could start it at the level of a manager of the coach, but it has to be the directors. Whoever is in charge of not just the team selection, but whoever is in charge of the management of the whole, you could say 2 weeks, because international play, if it ain't a tournament, it's usually just 2 weeks. They come in, they play on a Saturday, and then they play again on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and then they're back out with their national team. When it comes to that sort of situation, you need coaches, especially because, and it ain't my words, and it's the words of Alexi Lalas, these are pampered millionaires who think they could do what they want and they can expect a spot on the national team. And this is the reason why I respect Alexi Lalas on a lot of things. Number one, he speaks his mind, and probably a lot of times, especially when he talks about the way the players play, he is mostly right. He is somebody who's gone through the system, played during the time, you could say, during the 90s, where it wasn't really a lot of money, all the support that they get. He spoke the truth about one thing. These players are pampered to the point where they expect a spot, and when they don't get a spot, they will complain to everybody in the world and want that manager fired. There's one manager who didn't take their crap, and this is the reason why I respect Jurgen Klinsmann. You know, top player. He didn't really need to take on the U.S. national team. You know, he was a former Germany national player and a former Germany coach. He is somebody who took that team to another level, but sadly the talent at the time couldn't have him sustain it. You know, he was during a time where Donovan was still, he was a little bit out of his prime, but he was still serviceable. So was Dempsey. Talk about players like Jesse Zardes. Talk about players like Tim Howard. He was coaching those players to, and I'll tell you this, he led the U.S. national team to give tough games where Mexico was entering into their golden era in the modern times. And I feel like the coach they have now, Mauricio Pochettino, he is a coach who is good, but he hasn't won anything unless this team was perfect. And what I mean by that is that when he was coaching, the one thing they always said about him is that his tactics weren't good enough when his back was against the wall. And for the U.S. national team, when you leave the CONCACAF system, when you leave playing against teams like Canada, Cuba, you know, Jamaica, when you're going against Germany, I don't think I have the confidence that he has the tactical brilliance in order to outwit a team like that, especially with the players we have today. And I feel like the U.S. national team needs a coach that, number one, doesn't have a pyramid system to the players. And this is what I've noticed in recent times when it comes to the U.S. national team. Pulisic is untouchable. No matter what happens, Pulisic will be on the team. He will start. And even if he has a bad game, no one's going to give him a bad eye. The U.S. national team needs a coach that, number one, makes sure the players are fit. Conditioning is a big issue. And number two, puts a mindset that if you're not here 100%, good luck next time. And number two, actually play players who are actually there, not because of their name, but because of the way they play and their form. There is a coach who is the manager of FC Barcelona. His name is Hansi Flick. His motto is always conditioning, and if you're late to practice or even late to the game, doesn't matter if it's by a second, you are benched. Even if you're the best player on the team, you get benched. And he instilled a sort of culture when it comes to Barcelona that they're now probably the best team in the world. The U.S. national team needs somebody like that who installs a culture, makes sure that if you're doing this, now I even say this for the people who know basketball, and Eric Spoelstra, somebody who has a system, has a culture in place, and all the players who are there after fall in line or get the hell out. And I feel like that is what the U.S. national team needs.
That is true. And here's another thing. What the U.S. national team needs, they don't need... Well, they could get, like, one of the best coaches, but they don't know the real culture of America. They need an American coach that knows the culture, that knows the players. Because the recent coach right now, he's Argentinian, but he doesn't know the American culture. He doesn't know anything about how the American style, American soccer style is. If you get an American coach, he knows everything. And that's what they need at this moment.
Yeah, I think you made a good comparison, because I was thinking, from everything I've learned recently, I think it might be, honestly, worse than the NBA. And we've talked about that before. So then as we wrap this up, what do you guys think would have to happen to change the team? Not necessarily to win a World Cup, but to make them internationally respectable again and to kind of reach their potential. Because people say, soccer isn't that popular in the U.S. And it's true, but we can't find 11 guys to be a top 10 team. What do you think needs to happen to change that?
For me, number one is, and I feel like it's not really a big thing, but I feel like it's something that needs to be established, a system. And this is the one thing that I'm pretty sure I felt this, that since the tenure of Mauricio Pochettino, he hasn't had a consistent starting 11. There hasn't been two games in a row where he's played the same exact players in the same exact system in the same exact position. And I feel like that's a huge issue. And I feel like that's one thing that if you have no consistency, if you don't have a culture, you don't have a plan, there's no way you can improve as a team. And again, a lot of these times where you're playing international football, you have 2 weeks. 2 weeks to practice, 2 weeks to play, 2 weeks to have a team gel together. And in those 2 weeks, then you have about a month or two to then you could do it again for another 2 weeks. And I feel like that is the one thing that if we're going to keep Mauricio Pochettino for this 2026 World Cup, you need to have a consistent players that are going to be played. The only excuse you need to have if they're not playing is one, they're suspended, or two, they're injured. If that is not the deal, every single player that you hope is going to play in the 2026 World Cup needs to be there and needs to be playing. Or else, what's the point? If you do not have a team that you're going to trust that was going to play, and again, technically, we have less than a year. We have less than a year to field a 2026 home World Cup team. How do you not have already a team established? A team that you have consistently play. That's the one thing I feel like could change for now. For the future, it's very easy. The whole soccer culture and system needs to change. We need to adopt a European style system and culture. What I mean by that is that if you are playing soccer, number one, it's cheaper to make leagues competitive when it comes to the youth sports. These teams already established in the MLS, there's no relegation. You're having a consistent money coming in and coming out. They should have an academy that is, number one, free, but number two, it looks and feels like a university. What I mean by that is that you have housing, you have education, and when you're not sleeping and if you're not studying, you're out there in the field practicing and playing. That's the things that England has, that Germany has, Mexico has it. A lot of these nations that are good at soccer have this culture that if you're playing soccer, you could be poor, but you still have the same opportunity as somebody who's rich. And you get the education and you get this sort of culture that comes with it. I think those are the things. The first one, it's something that could be changed now, especially now that we're going into this new World Cup. That's a home World Cup. That's the things you need to change right now. And in the future, that is the big thing that needs to be changed. If you do not change the culture in soccer and you don't make it, I would say free, but at least affordable. then there's no way you could change that aspect in the U.S. for the future. And I can tell you this right now, that's the one thing that these other sports in the nation have done. The only exception is hockey, but I'll be honest with you, that is a huge exception. Because football, they realized it, they've made things more cheaper, especially for soccer, where the only thing you really need is a soccer ball and cleats and probably little shin pads. You don't need a helmet and everything, but yet it's much cheaper. Basketball realized this since the beginning. It's the reason why they're very affordable too. And it's the one thing that could change U.S. soccer for the future is make it more affordable. Or else, and this is the one thing they don't realize, and especially for Mexican Americans, a lot of them prefer to play in Mexico and for Mexico because they feel more attached to their culture. And the second thing, it became affordable for them to do so.
I agree with you in that part, because if they don't make it affordable for the people who, for the parents who cannot pay $1,000 back then, now it's more than $1,000. It's $3,000 per season. That means now parents are paying 12 or even more, depending on which league they are competing on. And I feel like some of those players, the only thing they're going to do is play other sports. And if not other sports, they're just going to leave to another place to play soccer and hopefully have a good education. Because in some parts of Europe, they pay for your education. And I heard that in Mexico, Chivas, they pay for the players' education. And that's what the U.S. needs to do for the young talent. If you want to play, we'll pay for your education.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a follow, and we will be back with more content very shortly.